have a bunch of resources. I have not compiled it in as a list, but I can report back of the treasure trove that I have found.
And I knew you were sending me some stuff earlier, and so on for stuff, so that's exactly what I intended to put in here. We correlate that when we have our final list of actions.
Yeah, I should be able to get that. Yeah, I should be able to get that. When's the next big waterways meeting? Middle of June.
Couldn't see you.
Sure.
I should be able to have it all put together by then.
We're all three official appointees of the subcommittee, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
So we do have a quorum. That's always kind of holding on.
Two out of three, if you have two out of three, yeah.
I guess, I mean, because I'm ex officio with the waterways.
Yes.
But I don't know if I can, I don't know if I can, I don't know if I can, do I vote here? Because I'm not allowed to vote in waterways.
Okay.
Oh.
So we're lacking a quorum.
Oh, okay.
Unless I count for quorum on a subcommittee.
You're not on.
Yeah, that's my question.
I don't think so, but if you're not officially a member of the committee.
Hmm. Well, that stinks.
We need one more. Come on, give it just a couple of minutes here before we start to see Mr. Pringle.
Because you and I are not on waterways anymore.
Correct.
So, we have a quorum of one.
We have a quorum of the former waterways.
But I don't know, could you appoint a subcommittee? Now, you can't appoint a subcommittee. You have to be a member of the Waterways Commission, I believe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We pretty much have to have all the waterways folks here. We can miss one.
Well, there's only three.
Right.
And then we did that so that we...
So if you had two, you could do business.
Yeah.
That's always the problem when you put more than...
We're just here for the brains. We're not here for voting purposes.
Just a talking. We're just a talking plant. Well, I it's not an official response for the Coast Guard, but when I mentioned, Bob, Golly, what you and I were talking about, of why wouldn't it be great if you guys put in extra set of buoys in between the existing ones and the edge of the jetties to further, you know,
tell
discourage
people not to cut the corner.
To further discourage cutting it through there. He was like, he thought, you know, that might not be a bad, you know, coming from the Waterways Commission.
And I'll tell you, I got a similar positive response from Washington, D.C., Coast Guard.
Okay.
And I'll get into that, too.
Well, and we have a friend up there, as you know.
Yep.
She's going to be down this weekend.
Absolutely.
A friend of ours, neighbor, over on his side of the canal, is the new admiral. She was head of Sector Miami, Joanne Burria. So she is.
I think I got enough copies here for everybody.
But she's with the Coast Guard, and so admiral up there in D.C. on policy stuff. So.
How does that work, though? How do you request a buoy and get a buoy?
Well,
at the federal level.
I was going to ask for a little help from Mr. Suber.
Well, not only
that, he's done that before.
We ought to get with Chris Miller, Rutherford's office, and you know they'll because they love that kind of stuff.
If you guys would do me a favor, don't take those papers out of order. It will help us as we go through it.
So which one's first, the paperclip or the single?
The single one. Well, I meant the ones in the paperclip.
Don't take those out of order. Okay.
And I'll explain why as we go through it. It'll save us some time and be a little more efficient.
Definitely Chris would probably help you with that. And I'll say something to him, too, when I see him.
I assume we'll be needed.
Look at all these.
Thank you.
She's thinking, I've got it all set up. And then we came in and upset the apple cart.
Came in and
that's just how life goes.
Did I mention this, folks? Be a little more orderly if we find these things in order. And I'll
I'll go through one at a time, and I do have a
level of importance in the order.
You good?
Yeah.
See, this committee is working on it.
This opportunity came up, and so she did it, which is really where role she's more qualified for.
It's really more her jam.
Yeah, she stepped away from all that. She was a
CEO for business operations for the housing partnership.
She ran first years, volunteers, and CRA compliance, office builder. Director of small business development chamber, all that stuff. Kids got school age. She went back to school. Got a teaching degree and certificate. So she's got like 3 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
But she did that to be able to teach while the kids were in school. So she walked away from all that. Did that 14 years. Took about 2 years to finally find a place to land because everybody couldn't get past that first line on the resume. Oh, that's cute. You're an elementary school teacher.
Thanks. Can't use that.
Managed multi-million-dollar budgets and projects.
Sure.
But, okay. So, finally. Wow. So, finally, yeah, Aaron saw through all of that and talked to some folks, you know, that knew from the chamber days. And right. We're like, no, you need to get her. She was, yeah. You know, so, she was up there and did that for about, I guess, 5.
Well, doesn't look like we're going to have a forum, but we can certainly.
You can still, yeah, you can still meet, just can't take action, right?
And review. I guess with that, we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. And what I'd like to do, first of all, is go through, welcome everybody here to start with. But walk through what our action items were when we walked away from the last meeting. First one was the FOIA request for Coast Guard for the report 176-1456. I want to come back to that. I've actually taken care of that, and that's what this package will go through here in a bit. It's all about. The second was to review the current resources in place for spill response. Lindsay Brock graciously agreed to trace that down. He gave a pretty concise report at the last Waterways Commission meeting on what he found and still working on other things. And once that is complete, we will distribute that to everybody on the Waterways Commission and for what those resources are available. Overview of that, unless you want to add anything. Lindsay was that there's significant resources out there.
Yes, so what I found, just kind of recap, is that Sector Jacksonville has a salvage response plan, Sector Jacksonville for the Coast Guard, and they have a list of all of those resources. So we've compiled, I have that list of all of those resources. I also have the vessel response plan for Tote Maritime for their vessels that operate here out of Jacksonville. Had the vessel response plan for Crowley and how they operate, what their vessel response plan is for their vessels that also call out of here. And that's important because that has all of the resources that that they have contractual relationships with as well that are able to respond. And I had the online resources that the Coast Guard has for Sector Miami, and then I think I've got the one for Savannah as well in here, but the online resource that details exactly what all these vessels are supposed to be having. So that's what I have. There are some other spill response resources that are available through this one Coast Guard database that I'm still trying to figure out how to navigate to. I had to get permission to access it, and I'm kind of navigating through that. And then, of course, we've got the JAXPORT directory of those companies that are in that directory and their various roles in responding in through here. So I don't have it in a full detailed list, but that's what I will commit to have before the next Waterways Commission meeting so that it can be circulated.
Great. In the spill response plans, all vessels above a certain size are all required to have that vessel response plan listing those contractors.
Yes, and that's what we're doing is going through there and just pulling all of those contractors that they already have relationships with so that we know that that's a resource that can respond here into Jacksonville precisely because it's in their vessel response plan.
Okay, so that takes care of item number two, and item number three, that encompasses that also. Item number four, to look in the large contract, I think that is actually covered in what you're doing too because there's significant resources already there.
Yes, and I think at one time we had talked about those Navy tugs that are under contract for them, and I think after delving into that, it was pretty much general consensus that it would literally take an act of Congress for them to leave Mayport. Because that's what they're there for are those Navy, assets.
And also, as I understand what took place in this as a Navy asset, those tugs were put on standby that should this situation have gotten further out of control, they would have responded with or without any contractual arrangement.
Yeah, just to protect the federal channel.
Exactly. Yeah. So the next item, number five, is identify and provide recommendations for increased real-time communication in the event of incident in the future. A number of people were working on this. One of the things, and I spoke with Susan Brandon a bit, and one of the ideas is, and one of the outcomes of this would be a recommendation to the mayor's office to utilize their public relations. Nikki Kimbleton is the head of that currently. To be like a point of contact as the incident is unfolding, to broadcast information. Ellen Glasser, the mayor of Atlantic Beach, her big problem was her phone was ringing. She didn't have the information. People were panicking about the potential material and all of that. So that, will certainly be one of the outcomes of this to discuss that with the mayor's office.
And just to add on to that for C, which was me with the Propeller Club, if we can get the Propeller Club's email, which is, propclubjacks@gmail.com, included in that mayor's communication chain, then we can push that information out to our members and to social media channels as well.
Okay. And as far as be there, JMTX, Jacksonville Marine Transportation Exchange, Mr. Ed Fleming came to the Waterways Commission meeting, the last one, and gave a very nice presentation about the origin of the JMTX. And the origin of that was very similar to the situation we had where he actually was the instigator of it, to where at that time it was Atlantic Marine was putting in a large dry dock right near the channel for the river, and there was a lot of panic and of how this was going to prohibit the transfer of vessels, large vessels, so forth through the river. And basically what happened, they put that group together, they got all these entities together to where they exchanged information, determined there was a hazard safety analysis done for the whole thing, and all of the, it basically did what our objective is here, to share the information so everybody knows what's going on, and panic is necessary, then panic is necessary, but if it's not, it's not. The outcome of that was that the JMTX was funded by volunteer members who volunteered to participate and pay into that. And over time, much like some homeowners associations or other, you know, trade businesses, whatever, the membership would fall off. People would forget what the importance maybe of it was. And so basically it got to the point where they've lost their funding and it's kind of deteriorated. Now there is a gentleman out there that does, on his own goodwill, maintain some of the information that comes from Du Bois and some different things and still does distribute that. But the total information exchange has gone away, basically. The thought on that being that is an opportunity to go to the city and identify what would it require to refund that and maybe fund it from the city to provide that service and, you know, basically in perpetuity.
And these are the tide gauges and the air draft?
Right. And any modifications or changes to the river that might be proposed in development or anything like that to distribute, you know, that information and, you know, to, you know, kind of much like what the Waterways Commission does, you know, with, you know, a lot of the things we get involved with. That's going to require, that's not going to be an overnight thing, but it's something to research. Obviously, if that was done, you have to have somebody to head that JMTX, you know, much like the person that used to, Mike Getchell. I'm sure from the Propeller Club. He was the person that did that and is still doing what remnants of it are available today. And I know Dr. White uses that information significantly. I know the visiting vessels and stuff that transit the bridges and all that, they, you know, used to use that information. I don't know whether it's there today or not. But
I think there's still one on that's operational on the Dames Point, but I don't think any of the other ones that are upriver from there.
But that's all significant and valuable stuff for us. So I think that's going to be an ongoing initiative. I'd be happy to follow through more with that and report back periodically through the Waterways Commission and basically come up. I think what we need to do is come up with a budget. What would it take and propose that as to rejuvenate that information exchange.
I have a question. If that was rejuvenated, and I think it's a good idea, but if that was rejuvenated, would that organization also be part of the public dissemination of, you know, disaster-related information? Absolutely. So they would be also working in conjunction with the city, public affairs, and maybe the Coast Guard to kind of get information out to people to let them know what's going on. Because
right.
I think that the big fear with Atlantic Beach was they just didn't have much information. And what they could find online was kind of scary.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them for being afraid. You know, they didn't have enough. Right. They didn't have enough good information specific to the incident that allowed people to kind of relax a little bit.
Right.
If they could be part of that information exchange, I think that would partly solve our problem.
Yeah.
You know. To be honest with you, I didn't even realize that was an organization that existed.
Yeah.
And I would think a lot of people had no idea that they existed.
When all this came up about not getting the information out, you know, I'm an old fogey in all of that, but yeah, I assumed that was still in effect, and you know, my first thought was, well, you know, what happened? And
right.
And as I looked into it, I found out.
Yeah, there was, and I can't remember if it was NOAA or if it was the Army Corps, but one of those federal agencies that were monitoring a lot of I'm thinking more of the tidal and the air draft stuff. There was some lack of funding that happened in through that, and then those started failing, and then, like you said, you know, it was a lot of people that kind of like began the demise of it because there wasn't that information gathered to be able to share around and through there. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, I'll take that for further action. Like you said, it'll be ongoing. See what we can do. And if not that, maybe something similar.
I think if we've already got old infrastructure and an organization that existed and functioned, I think the issue is just figuring out how to refund it and get it. Because obviously there's a lot of public interest in this issue. And it seems like if that organization had existed, that might have alleviated a lot of people's fears. You know, because anything that affects the beaches, and I would include myself in this, because I was aware of the spill at the time. I honestly didn't know what had been spilled, and I didn't know if it was affecting the beaches or not, so I just didn't go to Hanna Park. I had an opportunity to go to Hanna Park with some friends, and I was like, you know what, I'll take a pass. You know, and that's me, but what happens when that starts affecting businesses and tourism and the reputation of Jacksonville? I mean, then you're talking about a serious ripple effect. And I think that the money spent on the Marine Transportation Exchange or, you know, other organizations like that could really have a real impact. And especially now that we're trying to ramp up economic activity at the port, I think that'd be a very important support mechanism. I think we just, as a community, kind of lost sight of that. And then, you know, that's fine. We can, you know, let's get it going instead of reinventing something. But something actually that you'd mentioned and we were discussing before we really got started here that I want to bring up, you suggested that perhaps a good idea, and I know we can't really take any action today or really make any recommendations, but, you know, adding buoys between that jetty and the first channel marker there, the first green marker, you know, I wonder if pursuing that would have helped, because I read through the Coast Guard report really quickly while we were starting the meeting, and one of the things that they talked about in here that to me seems...
Good segue.
great segue. when you kind of go through all the, you know, this happened at this time and that happened at that time, one of the things that they talk about in here is that the master and mate had never completed the transit together. There was also a master's first time operator of the Marjorie and towing the Bridgeport. It was also the master's first time bringing this tow to Jacksonville. The paragraph before under precondition, the company did not provide any specific vessel or route familiarization to the master, and the master's pass down consisted of a walkthrough of the vessel totaling approximately 1 hour and no discussion about route specifics. If the company had provided the master route familiarization training, this could have prevented the Bridgeport from becoming grounded. So, considering the human aspect of that, because I look at the end of the jetty and I look at that first green channel marker, and I'm not thinking danger is existing between those two items. Of course, I don't run barges, so I wouldn't think of that, you know. But it seems like buoys or markers or something would have made it so that if the precondition was set up again with an inexperienced crew and an inadequate briefing, they would see the buoys and go, you know what, we should probably go around that. And they wouldn't need the briefing, like sort of a belt and suspenders approach to safety. I mean, you know, theoretically they would have studied the charts and figured it out and gone the right route, and obviously most vessels do that. They don't cut it that close.
Two other barge tug stayed out and was waiting for the weather to get a little better, to your point.
Yeah, so I think the buoys, I think when we talk about communication with the Marine Exchange, that seems like a good solution. Mm-hmm. with relatively low investment, and I think engaging the Coast Guard in what is it going to take to get some sort of safety buoys or something out there that just lets larger vessels. I mean, obviously this is not a problem for recreational vessels or even most vessels, but the few that really matter that are going to cause a real problem need to not take that shortcut. So
the interesting part about this is you just read my highlights.
Yeah.
In anticipation of that, I'd like to back up for just a second if
okay.
we could on this whole thing, because the motion, we made a motion at the last subcommittee meeting to request, do a FOIA request for this report and do it officially in the name of the Waterways Commission. You know, saying that we, and then mm-hmm. that was at the Waterways Commission that was again voted on as sanctioning, you know, the subcommittee to do that. It's something interesting for future reference. I did that. And I did it in the name of the Waterways Commission, and I intended to doing it personally first. But I did it. They sent me the entire unredacted report. And every single page of that report was stamped with, "This report contains information protected from release to the public under 5 U.S.C. 552A. Okay? Mm. And so basically, here's everything you want to know, but you can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I went back to, and I said I'd gone through Congressman Rutherford's office, and they pointed me in the right direction in D.C., and it got a hold of the right person up there, and it took a while, but then I told her, as I looked through the entire report, it had all the evidence and, you know, the evidence of legal action and all that personal information, drug tests and, you know, all of that type of stuff that obviously you can't not be released. So when I went back to them, and I got to say the Coast Guard at that point was very, very cooperative. They were very professional in protecting the information needed to be protected, but in the same hand, worked very diligent to get me the information that I needed from this committee. And I just want to make that point. They were extremely good.
That's good to hear.
And so, you know, you got copies of, you know, obviously the final letter that they sent. But you're exactly correct. When I went through this, these were the two important parts of their investigation. Mm-hmm. What they feel caused it, and what they, you know, what would prevent it, you know, from happening. And what they said was just what you said: the cause of the incident was loss of control of Bridgeport during maneuvering, due to lack of training/familiarity
mm-hmm.
With the operation. Okay. Now, as we said before going in with this subcommittee, there are certain things that we can do, but there are certain things that we don't control. We don't control the DEP, whether things are hazardous material or not. Okay. We don't control necessarily whether everybody that transits that river has the proper training and the proper familiarity and all that. So in business, there's a tool that's used. It's called visual management. You know, how do I get the behavior that I'm looking for with little or no training or supervision? Okay? An airport is a classic example of that. How do I get people to go through security in some orderly fashion and stay where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be? Well, they put up these little, you know, the little tape, you know, turnstiles or whatever, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call them, and it guides people like cattle, whatever, through there. Well, they don't train anybody on that. They don't necessarily supervise anybody on that, but it's intuitive. They get the behavior that they're looking for. And when you look at this report, you know, and what they say, they had training, weren't familiar with it, and then later on in the under the conclusions, they say the transit was the first transit of the master who was made into Jacksonville. And then later on it says it was also the master's first time bringing a tow into Jacksonville, Florida. So we can't control whether people come in here and this is their first time or not.
Right.
So when you look at the pictures that I put with this package, these are two of, I have some of the other pictures here that were authorized too, but they were just pictures of the barge with them sitting on the beach, mm-hmm. you know, listing and all. But you look at this thing and you see where that barge is, it's on the rocks. But if you look particularly at the one picture that you can see, the green marker buoy out there.
Yeah, I found that very helpful.
Okay, that is a key picture. Because this barge is hard aground. When you read the report, the barge was aground, and they waited until they had high tide to remove it from there, so it refloated. If this is aground at high tide, and this refloats, those rocks are underwater, and you can't see them.
Mm-hmm.
This was the beginning of a nor'easter that took place when this barge came in here, which was extremely high tides. And we live on water and stuff. We know what that means. So when you look at this, they also said that this happened in the transition from a stern tow to where they were bringing the tug into the notch, you know, doing that maneuver. Well, why were they doing it here? Okay? Now, if anybody was looking, and you got clear water, you're not familiar with the area, all those rocks are underwater, you don't know they're there. You think they start another quarter mile or half mile on up the river. Mm-hmm. And so they're doing their maneuver, to, you know, somewhere at this location. I think that brought light to just what we suspected, just what we talked about, and as you're saying, you know, we need to mark that. So we need to make it intuitive that once you pass that furthest buoy in there, you're between rocks. You know, you're in harm's way.
You're getting close.
Do whatever you need to do before you get to that point. And we don't need that to be, you know, some note on a chart somewhere that only people that read the chart are
right.
going to see or rely on, you know, somebody's training or education of all the people that do transit through there.
It needs to be physical.
It needs to be the measure push. How do we get the behavior we want with no training or supervision?
Well, right. And that's proactive. You know, having all of the response resources and all of that, that's reactive to where something that's already happened. This is proactive to prevent this from, you know, at least a measure to prevent it from happening.
Yeah, I like the two-prong approach on that. Make sure you have the reactive ready, but let's focus on the proactive. And I think either a marker or signage. I mean, I was always trained to go around the first buoy and not try to cut between them, even though most recreational vessels can cut between them.
Yeah.
But you know,
and they do. We've had many yachts and in even tugs that have wound on us south Jetty Rocks.
Hmm. Mm.
This isn't the first time.
So that, I mean, that's an indicator. We can't really throw all the responsibility for the outcome on that skipper. You know, it has fooled other captains. And so that speaks to the fact that we have an inherent danger in our system that we could fix. And I think that would be the most impactful fix that we could do.
Yep. And I think the other thing is we have thousands of transits of this river every year that are safe and uneventful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's not like...
because they usually approach the channel from the sea buoy.
Yeah.
instead of cutting in so midway.
Cutting the corner.
Focus being on those that are unfamiliar,
mm-hmm.
or untrained, whatever, is, like you say, I think it's... but, you know, having said that, I don't know... We kind of have a clear direction here, I think, and we can't obviously make a motion. Or
do you, I mean, point, but how, are you going to take over or you want me, I mean, to find out what is the process for requesting an additional set of buoys?
Or something.
Well, buoy's probably going to be there because they're not going to put a piling in because that's going to get moved around. So putting in an extra set of buoys would be the easier.
Mm-hmm. Or signage on the end of the rocks. I mean, sometimes you'll see signage, but, you know, good luck seeing that.
You got to have something big, flashing, you know, that kind of lets them know, okay, this is too narrow. Because I don't see it on there, but there is a marker somewhere there on the end of the jetty, I thought.
No.
Not really.
It's just rocks.
I thought there was one at one time. Maybe that's gone, too.
Like I say, you get those nor'easters, those rocks, where they are. You just don't know exactly where they're at.
No.
Mr. Brock, I would appreciate anything. The other issue that I have, I'm going to be traveling rather significantly for about 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be great if you could do that.
I will do that.
I'll go forward with the communications about the JMTX to get the information, what's needed, what would be an estimated budget, and what would that entail, what service that would provide, and so forth. And also going forward with the mayor's office, I'll talk with his folks about that and see what we can do.
I like it. We can't approve anything, but I like it.
we can go forward with that, those things, like, mm-hmm. without a motion.
Yeah, no, I was just making a note so I don't forget it.
anybody have any?
Sure. Yeah, Bruce, 4 acre, 4441 Jenna Trace Court. It's on the guard there. So I kind of had a couple of questions. One of them kind of is along the lines of what you were discussing with the buoy, and I just don't understand how anyone with maritime training didn't know to keep that buoy on the port side of their vessel.
I think the Coast Guard report shows that they shared that same why. Yeah, why would you try to cut the corner when you can see the end of the jetty?
And I wonder if, you know, when we towed the destroyer into town a few weeks ago, obviously the people from who towed it for us already had pilot experience in the river, so we didn't need to use a river pilot because they are out of Green Cove Springs, so they tow up and down the river all the time. But why wasn't a pilot required for someone who's no experience whatsoever?
I believe because of the nature of what it was. It was a barge with the tug. It wasn't a large commercial vessel. But I know that didn't they have something in the report on that?
Well, the river pilot, you know, what engages a river pilot, I think, is a number of things. I think, and I'm not 100% sure, but it seems to me that the river pilot, if the vessel is over a certain tonnage, and if there's nobody that has experience in that river, then they're required. Because I know that a lot of the cruise ships, they have to have a pilot on board until the captain has a certain number of transits or something like that, then to where they qualify to do it themselves. And I think that all also ties to liability and insurance and underwriting and that sort of stuff with these guys. So I don't know exactly what engages that, but I don't control that. I think maybe we could control this.
Right. And definitely get some kind of marker at the end of the jetties to warn
you. Yeah.
If we could make it intuitive that, you know, you get outside from here to here, you're in trouble. Don't do that.
Well, I remember back in '86 at Freeman Richardson, we were involved in a lawsuit involving someone who had gone aground there, and the people who salvaged the boat were suing the owner of the boat, and they were counter-suing them, so...
So this is an old problem.
This is an old problem.
Yeah.
This was 40 years ago almost that this happened. So,
I think that speaks to the need for the proactive approach.
Exactly. And I think the thing is too that you to revert back to what the material was and all that kind of stuff. I mean, the objective of this, you know, there's a lot more stuff that comes through there, necessary goods and commodities and everything else, but. Could do a lot more damage. So this approach is what would preclude, and that's our objective. How do we keep this from happening?
Yes.
Sure.
Good morning, Lisa Reitman, St. John's Riverkeeper, 2800 University Boulevard North. A couple questions. One, I want to thank the committee for exploring opportunities to prevent this. Obviously, that's what we all want. And also looking at what you can control, what you can't control. On the things that are at the federal level, I do think, you know, correspondence from you all through the Waterways Commission, through Congressman Rutherford is helpful, even on things that we may not be able to control here locally. But two observations on the prevention side. When the barge grounded, there was a significant amount of time between the grounding and the spill. And I didn't see in this report that was handed out their response and how that was handled so we could determine potential ways to prevent that part to make sure that, you know, there's protocols in place that are doing everything they can to shorten that time and reduce the risk And it may be in the bigger document you have, but I think that's something worthy of this committee looking at and determining if there's protocols that can be improved on the prevention side. And then on the communication side, appreciate the mayor's office getting involved and others, because I think, as we all know, the public, that was their biggest concern is how risky is it, especially when folks were out there surfing at Hannah Park and got exposure. But it seems like the Coast Guard or a public agency should initiate that contact with the mayor's office, because they're the one that's going to be on call. The mayor's office, it may be 2-3 days before it's on their radar if the media doesn't know. So that could be a request either through the mayor's office to the Coast Guard or a recommendation from this committee. I think that will help with those proactive communications. So looking at the prevention piece a little bit more in detail between the grounding and the actual spill, and that communications being started by the Coast Guard. When we were trying to get info, it was coming from their contractor. And, of course, the contractor is not, you know, obligated to the public like the Coast Guard is. It needs to come from the agency.
Yes. I agree totally with that. The one thing you'll find is the Coast Guard, outside of the hazards to navigation and that sort of thing, will be somewhat reluctant because of the potential litigation and everything else that goes on to, you know, release too much information on the individuals and all of that sort of thing. But the DEP and the Coast Guard were communicating, and that's information. And they were sampling, they were witnessing, they were assessing the hazard. And that particular information, there's no reason that information couldn't have gone out real time. And I do know also that, as this report said, that the barge was grounded on the rocks. They had to wait till the tide cycle to get the barge off. Once they got the barge off and they inspected it, they determined that they had breached the four-peak tank, and it was taking on water and it was listing. And the decision, you know, of course, was made at the time to beach it so that it wouldn't sink, you know, at the time. And then the nor'easter, which caused the high tide in the first place, it hit with foul wind. But the actual salvage process did initiate pretty rapidly. But when the heavy weather came in, they had to pull off for the safety of the individuals and the people that were involved in the operation. And that's when hatch covers, you know, came off and, you know, all of that during the heavy weather. So, but there was some significant immediate response actually took place to it until the weather hit.
And
all of that information just, you know,
it didn't quite get to this.
So if I can just add on to that, one of the things from a role with the Propeller Club, I reached out to Captain Blom because I had seen, in looking at what other ports had, I saw this, you know, Harbor Safety Council that had been formed in different ones. And I didn't see anything about that here. Well, I contacted Captain Blom. He goes, "Oh, yeah, we've got one." Well, how does one get invited? And he's like, "Oh, I'll get you an invite." You know, and I think there's one they're having either later this summer that they'll be doing. And one of the things that I intend to bring up at that meeting is exactly what you're talking about, is how do we, even if, from the Coast Guard's point of view, they've got a very narrow focus. They were, okay, is it a hazard to navigation? Is it in the federal channel? No. Boom. Is it a toxic substance? No. Boom. Okay. This is a civil matter. Let the salvage guys and everything go at it. So from their point of view, once they check those boxes, it's not a hazard on the water, to the water, from the water, then they move on to their next mission, and they left it to that. But that failure to
communicate
and get that information out is one of the things that I'm hoping that when I get there to the table at the Harbor Safety, I think it's called the Harbor Safety Council, that it will, that we can talk about how that information can be better communicated. And that's the whole idea with, you know, what we're talking about here, of getting that information out, having it come from an official agency, you know, to where
you know, can we say the Coast Guard says this? You know, okay, then, you know, we can, you know, do that. I doubt we're going to get a press release from the Coast Guard on it because they don't like to do that, and B, they look at it as it's not our issue. But at least having someone say it's not our issue and here's why. Then I think if that could have been communicated, then it would have alleviated you know, some of the fears that were out there when this first happened.
Totally agree.
May I respond or follow-up question?
Sure.
I think you just identified one of the worrisome loopholes in this discussion because coal ash, it contains multiple toxic substances. But it's considered, what's the term? How do you probably know? It's a, you can reuse it in a safe way if it's encapsulated. So they classify it as a little different. But when it's just exposed like that to the water and the people, there are toxic substances in it. And I know this is a federal discussion, not
sure.
a local discussion.
And those levels never reached toxic. You know, that was the good thing was when, you know, finding that out.
But the Coast Guard checks the box that's toxic, even though there's toxic substances. And so there's a way that the Coast Guard, you know, could have some sort of protocol just to say they may be present. And again, this may be a federal issue, but maybe from the mayor's office or the Waterways Commission, just saying when something like this that could be toxic, you know, or has, you know, that there's just some formal communication, doesn't have to be a press release, but directly to local officials impacted, the beaches, you know, the mayor's office, something to alert just so people know. And it'll tap down the hysteria and possibly also get the contractors to work more quickly to remedy the issue. And all the prevention is key, though. Obviously, we don't want to see this again, but if it happens again, the Coast Guard, there's a way to close that loophole and just identify if it's not being used as it could be used, and it's just for disposal, that puts people in harm's way.
Okay, and I think, if I could, you know, my thoughts on that, yeah, those are issues that, from, you know, people going forward, you know, take up, and I know those can come back to the Waterways Commission for support or, you know, whatever. In the meantime, until, you know, if we can prevent from having the incident in the first place, it almost doesn't matter what the material is. And that's, you know, and that's our objective here, at least
right.
for this subcommittee.
Because the material could have been a lot more hazardous.
A lot more.
You know, depending on what vessel grounded, and I think doing the buoy approach to prevent it from happening in the first place kind of helps eliminate.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, through the chair, Mr. Brock. So my curiosity on this is, even if it wasn't at the level of toxicity, was it at the level of being a possible carcinogen? And
well, I think all of them are potential carcinogens. When they were doing all the testing and they were testing the water there and they were testing the water in the river to try and get a, you know, what's the background levels? Some of those chemicals that were in the water and probably, you know, released from the coal ash, the river actually had higher levels. Just the natural flow of the river actually had higher levels of some of those elements than what were present around there. Are they, you know, carcinogens? Well, yes. I mean, at all, you know, different levels. I mean, there was arsenic, which arsenic occurs naturally.
There's arsenic in there. There's radon in there. There's several other things that are.
I know there was nickel. I think nickel was the one that was actually higher levels in the river. Natural, you know, I don't know if it's natural or not. It probably came from somewhere. Usually run off from down south from the fertilizer and all of that, but that's a whole different discussion. That's where Ms. Reinemann and I are lined up 100% because it's, you know, we pay the price of everything that happens
upstream.
You know, that's the sad thing about our river here in Jacksonville is we do pay the price of everything that happens upriver. But to that point, that's what I was saying is there were elements in and compounds in the river at higher levels in some respect than what was actually released from the barge.
So it was above the ambient levels?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, the ambient levels were above the levels.
Yes,
yeah.
Right.
You know, with any toxin in the environment, the important thing to consider is the pathway of exposure and the level of exposure to people. And I think the sampling, and you know, you're dumping a bad substance in the ocean. It's not that that's okay. It's just when you talk about what are the exposures and risks to people, I would say that it's, I think the data suggests that the risk to people was very low, probably lower than other obvious risks like drowning. So, you know, I'm not saying that gives any of this a pass, but I think it's a clear warning shot that, you know, we need to do something to prevent something worse from happening. And so I don't think it means that we don't have to do anything. I do think we need to do something. But yes. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time worrying about what this cargo discharged, because I think it's pretty clear that where it was and how much it was diluted and what it was to begin with, yeah, we kind of got lucky, I would say. But luck is a bad strategy.
As a follow-up, I think back to the Coast Guard loophole about, you know, they check it off and say it's not toxic, even though there's toxic hazardous materials in it. At that point, DEP becomes the lead, and they're responsible for contacting the mayor's office. I think there just has to be some communication protocols that everyone's in the loop so the public's informed.
Yes.
I have a question. The MTX organization, and I was not aware that we had a Harbor Safety Council. Are we reinventing the wheel? I mean, are we recreating a bureaucratic process that we don't need, or does the Harbor Safety Council have a role here?
I don't think we are. My understanding is that JMTX may work in conjunction with the safety, but I'm not all that familiar with what all of their mission is. But that's a question for them that I'd be happy to take up.
Okay.
With the JMTX people. You know, how do you work, or how do you interface with this? And is it is there redundancy there?
Yeah, in my brief understanding, I haven't attended the first meeting yet, but my brief understanding is that the Harbor Safety Council is what I believe it falls under the arm of the Coast Guard, and it is in sharing information, best practices, what are we seeing, you know, happening in there, just so that there's an opportunity to kind of have the industry speak with the regulators on that specific issue of safety. But you know, is it? I think probably JMTX is a broader scope of players and a more public-facing instrument to get the information out.
Okay.
But I'll be able to, slightly different
mission.
Yeah, but as soon as I attend that first meeting, I will be happy to come back to the Waterways Commission and report.
Thank you.
Well, if there's no other further question or discussion, let me do a kind of a summary recap of what we've done and where we go. From our action items, number one, the FOIA request, that's done and gone. Items 2, 3, and 4 all are pretty much been combined into one, and Mr. Brock here is going to get us a distribution for the Waterways Commission.
Yes.
Of where that information resides and how you get to it, how you access it, and all that, and which would encompass number 2, 3, and 4. Number 5, under the communication, the mayor's office and public relations, I'll be happy to take that for further action to see what we can do with that. The JMTX, I'll also take that to further that initiative and how we can do that. And then the buoys, the markers on the jetty to pursue that.
I'll take that on.
You take that on, and I'd be happy to help with that in any way that I can, too. We're very fortunate on that we have a local person just made admiral for the Coast Guard and moved on to Washington, D.C., and she would be very helpful to us.
At least point us to the right door to knock on.
Exactly. That's half the battle. That's half the battle.
So, all right, with that, the meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.